According to a report in the Wisconsin State Journal, some Western Wisconsin school districts have some of the highest percentages of homeless students per population in K-12 public schools in the state. In fact, the Eau Claire Area School District is in the top 10 in that study, according to homelessness, ranked among districts like Kenosha, Beloit, Madison, and Milwaukee, who are at the top. Today on the West Side, we're talking with local and regional education officials about the growing problem of homelessness in the schools, hiding in plain sight. This is the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC Menominee Eau Claire and 88.7 WRFW in River Falls. I'm joined now by two women in the field of education. First, I'd like to introduce Danny Klaskis. She is Eau Claire Area School District's Homeless Program Coordinator. Danny Klaskis, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Good to have you. And I'm also happy to welcome Kristen Gundry. She is Learning Services Associate Director for Cooperative Educational Service Agency, or CESA 10, also wears many more hats that I'm not mentioning. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Also, later we're going to hear from Jerry Shea about the Border Battle Golf Tournament, which aims to raise funds for homeless students in the Eau Claire Area School District. So stay tuned for that. That'll come around the 10:30 bottom of the hour mark. So whenever I talk about a big issue like this on the West Side, like homelessness, I like to talk about definitions that we all, so that we all get a better understanding of the topic, because a lot of times there's preconceptions that take over when we hear terms like homelessness. Danny Klaskis, I'll start with you. So how do school districts define homelessness?
Well, we are under the USD, Department of Education, for our definition of homelessness. And I bring that up because there is also the HUD's definition.
Right.
And so theirs is a little less inclusive. And thankfully for our homeless students, we have a broader identification of homelessness. And for us, in Eau Claire area, typically that looks like families that are doubled up with other families, and it's not usually something that's going to be long-term, not usually a very comfortable situation, and relationships are often strained, and that's why we look at that situation as something that is really hard on a student when they're trying to go to school and do other things in their lives. So we call that doubled up. Also, the families that are living in motels or hotels, mm-hmm. not usually hotels, families that are in the shelters, who in our area we have Beacon and Bolton and Western Dairylands Homeless Havens. We also have Sojourner, which works with people who are 18 and older, and we see students there because if they are 18 or older and they haven't graduated from high school yet, you know, they're under our umbrella.
Sure.
and then we have families in their cars. Sometimes we have families that are in structures and buildings that are not intended for overnight use. A lot of different situations just in the Eau Claire area.
Now, Kristen, for CESA 10, it's the same definition. You go by the U.S. Education Department definition, because the main difference, what I noticed in the HUD definition, Housing and Urban Development Department with the federal government, if you're living in a hotel, they consider that as having a home. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about that.
It would only be, it would only be if a family was in the hotel and an agency was paying for that HUD
okay.
would identify them as homeless.
Okay.
If they're paying for it out of their own pocket.
That would be transitional housing, right?
According to HUD. For them, they would, yeah, consider
okay.
it not homeless.
800-228-5615 is the number to call. We'd like to hear from our listeners. If you have been in this situation or know someone who has had trouble getting stable housing, let us know. 1-800-228-5615. As I mentioned in the lead into the show, this really is an issue that, whether or not we realize it, it touches a lot of our districts, all of the districts probably in one way or another, in Western Wisconsin. I've got some numbers here that I'll get to right now. According to this study that was done by the just kind of a gathering of data by the State Journal, Eau Claire is at around 3.2% of the population that is homeless. Chautauqua, Weyerhaeuser, the same, 3.2%. Other districts in the more rural areas, Gilman, 4.8% homelessness. Birchwood, 7.4% homeless among the student population. And this is outside of our listening area a little bit, or actually it might be in our listening area, but it's outside the CESA 10. Unity School District is at 11.5%, actually just over that. Big numbers, surprising numbers for those that don't deal with it every day. Kristen, I want to ask you, since a lot of the territory that CESA 10 covers is rural, also, you know, some more urban, I guess, in Eau Claire, can we point to, is it a more of a rural or more of a urban issue, or is it just kind of across the board?
Homelessness is an issue in all communities, whether they're rural or urban. In the rural communities, it tends to look a little different because they don't have the same resources as a larger city would have. Mm-hmm. Our rural communities don't have shelters. They don't have, not all of them have food pantries or the resources to support. A lot of them don't have hotels mm-hmm. or any other housing option outside of the doubling up. Sometimes campgrounds provide shelter during the summer, but that's not a viable option during the winter.
Right. Yeah, it's really, the more I learn about this, the more troubling it is just to think how the situations that these kids might have that have to go to the school. So is there a cutoff? I mean, you mentioned a little bit, Danny Klaskis, about the ages. Some students are as old as 18, which would be basically senior in high school. Is there any one age group that seems to have more members that mm-hmm. are facing homelessness?
After running our numbers for 10 years in the program, it is very clear that our biggest population of homeless students are the younger kids who are fifth grade and under. The district, because the district serves third grade at Head Start age, all the way to up to 21, when that student still has that option to receive a diploma through the public schools. We see that span of student ages, and we've looked at, you know, those kids that are in preschool and then in the elementary schools, and they definitely make up the largest of our population. 51% last school year mm-hmm. Were just in that fifth grade and under.
Do we have any idea why that would be? Because I saw both of you nodding your heads when you mentioned that. Danny?
For one, there's a lot of grades in there. You know, we have eight grades. But also we're, you know, the shelters will say the same thing. We're seeing a lot of young parents who have not gained the skills necessary to maintain, get a job to maintain a lifestyle. And so our parents are younger and younger, and they're homeless, and our kids are then becoming homeless sooner. That's a growing trend. That wasn't quite the case 10 years ago when I came into the position. It was definitely more weighted to the older students. And so it's been a shift.
Sure. 800-228-5615. We're talking about homelessness in general, but more particularly this hour, we're talking about homelessness in public schools, K-12 schools, right here in our backyard, with a growing number of students facing housing uncertainty, homelessness, whether they're doubling up with family or friends, whether they're living in cars or shelters. We're seeing bigger numbers, and we're going to get more into that later this hour. If you'd like to offer a comment or a question, let us know. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We've got wide open phone lines right now, and you can also post on the Westside Facebook page if you'd prefer that. So does CESA 10, you serve how many counties in CESA 10, or how many districts, I should say?
29 school districts.
29 school districts. So do you have any kind of idea or a total for the number of students that are facing homelessness within that, or an idea whether or not it's growing?
It is definitely growing, and the number fluctuates from year to year. We have a lot of transient homeless people in our small communities that may go from one small school to another small school. Every school district has a homeless liaison, sure. and they are charged with connecting with the families and helping them get to school so that there's not a break in their education.
So anecdotally, they're just telling you that we're seeing more and
significantly. Our homeless liaisons who work in CESA 10 had some of them had not seen any homeless people 3 years ago. The families, we were not seeing that 3 years ago, and now every homeless liaison in CESA 10 has at least one family that they're trying to help keep safe and get the kids to school.
And that's interesting to me because I remember hearing or reading in 2009, you know, the economic recession was officially over, according to someone in Washington, I think. And what about Eau Claire School District? The Leader Telegram ran something, and I believe it was fall of last year, that said that the number of homeless students in the Eau Claire Area School District has grown mm-hmm. pretty substantially. Mm-hmm. So what's going on there, Danny Plaskas?
Well, we did have that jump from the previous school year to last school year. That was a 90 student jump from what we typically see. And then this year we saw another jump in our numbers. And, you know, for these families, I hear that a lot, that the recession should be over, they should be doing better. But for these families, they're, you know, at either it's one of two situations. And I really want to put the numbers out there that, you know, through the 10 years, a lot of what we do is helping families that get into a bad situation. They get out, and 75% of the families we see each year, we don't see again. So this is a one-time deal for most of our students. Another 20% will see a second time or a second year, and then we won't see them again either. So it's a very small population that is continuing to stay homeless. But it's these many kids that we are trying to smooth out that rough time in their life, at least education-wise, to make sure that when they get into that situation that they're not suffering, and their education is not suffering, but also they are being connected with resources to get out of homelessness as soon as possible. So when numbers go up and they're thinking, why is this, you know, with the recession being done, a lot of times these families are just, as many of us do, get into a tough spot in our lives. Unfortunately, this is a lot more extreme than probably many of us experience, but they get into a situation and they get the necessary resources, hopefully as quickly as possible, and then they get out. And sometimes recession, you know, does still affect families, but sometimes it just doesn't. Sometimes that's just something that happens. And I was going to say, you know, that the families that when they do comment about the recession being done and I don't understand why these families are suffering, those families really aren't even at a place, whether it be mental health or not having educational skills or dealing with parting of partners or a marriage, that these families are not in a place to even figure out how to sustain themselves yet. Mm-hmm. And so they are the ones that, you know, even if the jobs are out there and even if the housing is out there, they're in a really tough place and they're still healing to get to that spot where they can attain that housing and attain those jobs.
Right. A variety of issues, I think, in the Leader Telegram article, which was really well done, last fall, there was a mention of, you know, I mean, domestic abuse is one situation mm-hmm. where a family might find themselves in a homeless situation or with less certainty about housing. Is this more of an issue for minority students? Like, do we see migrant working families playing into this at all? Danny Plaskas, I'll start with you.
I definitely think that we have noticed that our families that are undocumented, because by law we serve yeah. every student that comes into the school district, as we should, and so we do notice that, of course, it's harder for them to find any kind of housing, and they certainly don't have the documentation necessary that would require them to get their own place a lot of times. So that is something we do see. I hate to play on the numbers for race, but I will be very honest. I do see a lot of families, and to be clearly honest, more of them are Black in our community than what our percentage would pan out of white students who are homeless versus Black students who are homeless versus our Hmong and our other Asian. There is a lopsidedness, and those are the numbers. Yeah. They really are. And it does make me wonder sometimes what our families who are Black have for resources and what our community, how our community is serving all our families within our community.
Later this hour, we'll talk a little bit later here about what districts and what communities are doing, what regional organizations like CESA are doing to address this this issue of homelessness. I wanted to let listeners know, remind them that we're talking about homelessness in K-12 public schools in western Wisconsin. It's an issue statewide, nationwide, worldwide, but right here in our backyard, even though it's not a very visible problem, it's definitely there. Eau Claire School District, 321 students by last count, I think that those are numbers from last year, are facing homelessness. That's out of a population of total population of a couple thousand or much more students. Okay.
Our school district.
I mean the district itself, the number of students.
Yes, we have about 11,500.
11,000. Yep. Okay, that's about 3.2% as of last count. It's a growing issue, and again, in rural areas, the numbers go up to towards 7%. Which, of course, are determined by population, but still, 7% is too much, I would say. What about issues of homelessness and learning? Again, listeners can call in at 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment about homelessness in public schools, about what schools offer or are able to offer people in this situation, or about what you can do to try to help the problem, give us a call, 800-228-5615. We've kind of touched on this a little bit, but how does having uncertainty about your living situation impact learning? Chris and Gundry, I'll start with you.
Students who are put in a homeless situation often are struggling with trauma issues, and when your basic needs aren't being met and you're sitting in a classroom, makes learning very hard. If you're wondering where you're going home after school or what you're going to have for lunch or how you're going to get home from school, it makes hard to concentrate on learning.
Distracted, like, all the time. Danny Klaskis, would you like to add to that?
I completely agree. We recognize, this program is very important within all school districts, but especially in the Eau Claire School District, because we know when our students walk through the door, if they are focused on that, then they're not focused on learning. And if our job is to make sure that they are learning things, then our job is also our opportunity, more so, is to provide what we can to make sure they're ready to learn.
Is there any kind of data that shows test scores for students in this situation versus not that you all have that you can share? Or is it just kind of anecdotal?
It really is anecdotal from child to child, from living situation to living situation. So, I haven't seen anything that has been put out either by the federal government or, DPI that really hones in on, yes, these are concrete numbers of when you are homeless and when you are not homeless, what your test scores look and what it is very much individual situations of what that student has had in the past and what kind of student they are. And
would that be useful information? Is it that we're not looking, or is it hard to get that info?
I think it would be difficult to get. I think that each student is very different and their situations are very unique in homelessness. And if they are only experiencing homelessness typically one time, that those scores are probably not going to really be an accurate measure of what that homelessness is doing to them. But through time, you know, that student, the emotional effects of that student, the learning that could be missed if they were switching schools, or the days that they don't get to school, or the days they're at school and they're not engaged, because they're that's probably the bigger issue that's going to take a toll long term on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got our first call of the morning, and we're going to go to Menominee, and Shelby is on the line. Shelby, welcome to the West Side. What's on your mind?
Hey, so I wanted to call in because I have actually been working with Kristen. I've been working with Danny a little bit, and I am serving as an AmeriCorps member at FISA 10, so I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit about what the schools are doing and stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but the Department of Public Instruction, they put together with a couple of different FISAs this AmeriCorps program where we are based out of the CISOs, and we help to kind of gather all of the resources that are in the communities. And so there's one at CISA 10, 1, 2, and 7, and they're branching out more. So just kind of a brief overview that we're kind of all over Wisconsin right now.
Well, that's great. So what kind of resources are you able to bring?
Yeah, so that's what I was just going to touch on. So for CISA 10, it's really difficult. I know that you were talking a little bit about the differences with rural communities and urban communities. And the thing with rural communities is that there just aren't many at all. Most of northwestern Wisconsin, we don't really see, and there aren't any shelters, there aren't any food pantries. A lot of times the stuff that they do have are very, very small food pantries working out of a church or something like that. And so it gets really difficult, even when it comes to mental health care or free clinics. They're just very sparse. And so that makes it really, really challenging for the schools. I think with Danny and Eau Claire, she's doing really great stuff there, and it's they're so lucky to have Danny and to have the resources. But for CISA 10, for example, if you go all the way up to, I've been to Medford and done some trainings there, there's just not as much. Medford still has some resources, but Ladysmith, Bruce, all of those different communities, they might have a food pantry and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have housing, which we, through the housing first model, we know that housing is the first thing that people need in order to be able to function to do anything else. So it's a challenge.
Well, thanks for the work that you do. I appreciate the call too. And if people want to get involved with your efforts, how do they do it?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way for that would be to go to, we have a Facebook page, and it's Wisconsin BPI VISTA Project. So WIBPIVISTA Project, and that's probably the easiest way. Otherwise, all of the resources that I have been sent out to the school districts, so you could also contact the school districts, and they all know who I am, too. So,
all right. Shelby, thanks. Did I interrupt?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for the volunteer work that you do with AmeriCorps. I'm not sure if you're compensated or not, but either way, AmeriCorps is a great organization, and Kristen Gundry, tell us about, we've already gotten the case from Shelby, but what is having that kind of help coming to a CISA?
AmeriCorps VISTA program?
Yeah. What does that mean to you?
It's a huge gift to our area. Not only, there aren't any funding resources when you have such small pockets of homelessness, so yeah. The VISTA program is putting amazing people in our communities and assembling those resources and going to the community. When you're in a rough spot, something falls through, you're more likely to go to a family member or a friend to consult. So it's important that those resources are readily available. A lot of times the school isn't your first point of contact when life takes a dive.
So that's interesting. You mean because a school district may only have one family that is in a homeless situation and the student is in a homeless situation, is there a certain threshold that you have to meet before you can get state aids? Is that what you're inferring? Or am I barking up the wrong tree here?
I don't think so. I think that DPI is very focused on looking at all the school districts in Wisconsin, and those that do not have established programs, they are, you know, because they saw these small pockets in each school, that they were more focused on CESA being the ones to receive some new funding and to start coordinating that. So I don't think it's a numbers thing for DPI.
I understand. No. Okay. With that, let's take her. Oh, what? I'm getting signals. Kristen, go
ahead.
I
was just going to, each district does have that homeless liaison who does have access to those resources. So whenever the situation arises, they can work with CESA or VISTAs or our local resources to meet those needs.
And for some of the rural or smaller districts, the liaisons, are they someone like Danny who is dedicated full-time? I would imagine they might be another staff member that has this added on to their
plate. I'm pretty sure Danny's the only one in our region that Eau Claire puts a focus on that. Otherwise, it's often a school counselor, a superintendent, a principal, a Title I teacher, someone who has that as an additional responsibility to their work.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've actually got another caller I'm going to take real quick before we go to our first break. Jane in Eau Claire, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I would like to go back a little bit. I just wonder how you discover who is homeless.
Right.
You know, we talk about all these people, but where do the referrals come? How do they come to the attention of the authorities? That's one question. And what is the process for getting the student enrolled? Then, if somebody discovers somebody they think might be a problem, you know, how do they try to? If you suspect somebody might be, you know, needing this, how would they get into the situation?
Sure.
And how do they get into the process of being helped?
Jean?
And then the other thing, just a little bit more about migrant people. I was wondering you mentioned a little bit about this, but I was wondering on how do you run into undocumented migrants, or how do you, what is there some situation that goes along with the homeless? Because a lot of them are probably in family groups and that sort of thing, but could you tell me just a little bit about that? So that's
Jane,
my questions.
You just wiped out the rest of the questions I've got for the rest of the hour. thanks for the questions. Very quickly, if we can kind of glance over it, and then we'll address it more, because we were going to talk about the border battle golf outing here in just a bit. But Danny, how do you find out if someone is homeless real quick?
Yep.
And then how do they get into the system?
Well, and our staff members are, you know, they see those kids every day. They're kind of aware of family situations. So they are our number one source for getting that information to me through through the school counselor, principal, secretary. And then I serve them, you know, I talk to each family and I assess what's going on. But also huge partnerships with community agencies, whether it be the shelters or churches.
WestCap kind of stuff?
Yep, WestCap, city, county housing. Really, they know what I do and what the program does. So.
All right. And for migrant worker families, Kristen Gundry, how do you identify them, or do they self-identify? How does that work?
Well, and the question involved migrants and undocumented.
Sure.
And I think it's important to identify them as different, because a migrant population moves from one area to another, and it's a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And an undocumented person has different rights. Most of the migrant workers are U.S.-born, U.S. citizens that choose to go from farm to farm as part of their lifestyle, where an undocumented person still is welcome to our public schools. Everyone's welcome to our public schools, but they do not have access to the federal programs.
Okay.
So they cannot apply for government housing. They cannot apply for a lot of the federal programs. So they really do fly off the radar. A lot of people living in abandoned homes, abandoned trailers, cars, but they do not qualify for any of the federal programs because they are undocumented.
I think that's a distinction that a lot of people might not understand. We've got more callers coming in, but we're going to take our first break. We're talking about homelessness in public schools right here in Western Wisconsin. When we come back from the break, I'm going to welcome Jerry Shea to the program, who's helping organize a special event to raise money for the Eau Claire Area School District, specifically for their homeless prevention services. So stick with us. This is The West Side. We'll be back in just a minute.
Support for WPR comes from the UW Health Breast Center, offering second opinions for more than 4,000 Wisconsin women and men diagnosed with breast cancer each year. More at uwhealth.org/second opinion. Contributors to WPR include Rockweiler Insulation and Madison Country Day School. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Go to WPR.org/sponsor.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about homelessness in public schools in Western Wisconsin and more broadly across the state. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've had a couple of great calls. We can still take your questions and or comments. If you dial in at 1-800-228-5615, if you'd like to leave a comment on our West Side Facebook page, please do. Right now, I'd like to welcome Jerry Shea to the program. Jerry is a committee member helping to organize a special event to raise money for homeless students in the Eau Claire Area School District. Jerry Shea, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And also, I'm still joined by Danny Klaskis of the Eau Claire Area School District and Kristen Gundry of Cooperative Educational Service Agency, or CESA 10. Callers, you can let us know what you're thinking. 1-800-228-5615. Border Battle Gulf Outing. How long has this thing been going on? And tell me how you decided to, or how the group decided to fundraise for this specific case.
The border battle started at Wild Ridge in 2009, and the first 5 years, the Visit Eau Claire ran the border battle, and the Sports Commission was their beneficiary.
Okay.
After 5 years, and back in 2014, they decided to drop that, and the general manager, Tim Clouk at Wild Ridge, came to me and asked me if I knew somebody who might want to take over the border battle. So my friend Scott Lowett, I took it over back in 2014 under the umbrella Ruby's Pantry, which is a food distribution thing at Good Shepherd Church monthly. We had some capital needs there for a forklift and so forth. And so that first year it was Ruby's Pantry. Then Danny Klaskis started volunteering at Ruby's Pantry, and we got to know her and found out that they had lost their funding for their program. So last year, we switched the beneficiary to the homeless students in the Eau Claire School District. With some matching funds last year, we raised about $15,300.
Wow.
And this year, we had an anonymous gift right up front of $10,000, and we raised our goal this year to $30,000.
Huh.
Which is a stretch goal, but that's our goal this year.
And Danny, forgive me, we'll go back to the golf tournament here, but what do you mean the funding? You lost the funding for the...
Well, we were funded by a competitive grant through DPI. It was federal grant money, and the grant had taken care of the program for many years, separate from the school district budget. And a couple of years ago, we were very surprised to learn that we did not receive that grant. And when questioned, seemed like we were doing everything right. And the only thing that really we could figure out is that our district, along with a number of other districts, that funding was pulled because of our established programs. And they wanted to see that money go to places
that
where they hadn't been established yet. So it was a good move, and we're glad to see it. And I think places, you know, there were CESAs that definitely needed that money to serve those other school districts. But for us, we then had to look at our district budget and figure out how we were going to do this. And I, you know, I have to say that the administration and the community, you know, there was no question. We just had to figure out how.
Right. All right. So $10,000 anonymous gift so far. And so the Gulf, the border battle Gulf, I mean, are we golfing against Minnesotans here? Or what's the deal, Jerry?
The border battle comes from, it's tied to a Packer football game.
Sure.
And depending on what the NFL comes out with a schedule, we try to come up with a game against Minnesota, Chicago, or Detroit. Sometimes that works, sometimes not. This year it works very well because it's September 18th, and it's the first game for the Vikings at their new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Sunday night game. And so we start the day with registration and lunch. We golf 18 holes. We come in, we have prizes, we have silent and live auctions, we have a steak dinner, and then we have a Packer Viking party and watch the game.
Oh, that sounds like a good time. How do people get involved, and what's the cost to participate?
The cost per golfer is $125, and they can register online or they can call Danny or myself.
Okay. And do you have a goal for, I mean, of course, the $30,000, but as far as, is there a limit on golfers for this event?
We have said we are going to take the first 33 teams. We are, our goal this year is 140 golfers. And we also have a lot of corporate sponsorships. And we still are looking for a dinner sponsor.
A dinner sponsor. You heard it, folks. So we're talking about businesses, individuals. I mean, anybody can get involved with this, right?
Yes. Yes. And Danny and I have been out visiting businesses and individuals for the last couple of months. And the thing that we find is that most of the community folks don't know about this situation. So we've been doing a lot of education the last couple of months.
Yeah, I'm interested to get your take on that. I mean, because surprising for me, and I claim to be a connoisseur of news and local events. So do you still, people involved with this, do you still get those that are surprised that there are this many homeless students in Eau Claire or regionally?
Almost everybody we talk to are surprised, and the nice thing about our interactions is that everybody is very supportive and asks, you know, what can we do to help the situation?
Sure, sure. All right, so September 18th, and is there a website or something, or how do they just have to get a hold of either Jerry Shea or Danny Klaskis?
That's one option.
Okay.
There also is a website they can go online, and I need to read that so I get it right here.
Okay.
www.tinyurl.com/EC Border Battle.
That's a lot to remember. So what I'll do is if after the show I can put a link to that on our West Side Facebook page if people are interested, and they can also, we might be able to put a link on the actual show page too. So hoping to get 30,000. So all proceeds go to the Eau Claire Area School District homeless prevention situation?
The money raised goes directly to students and what they need. That is our goal, and that's where that number came from. We supply transportation when a student becomes
right.
homeless, and they are attending a school on the south side of town, and now they are doubled up or at a motel on the north side. We want to keep them at their same school. That's the whole goal of this program, if the parent wishes. And so that transportation cost can get pretty hefty depending on what the situation is. And so, a big part of this fundraising really goes to just that alone, and then we work with the community on other resources.
And Christian Gundry, I'm just curious, you know, with money from the state or federal government kind of dwindling, are we seeing, is this a unique situation where we see volunteer groups like the Border Battle folks? We also have AmeriCorps helping out. Are we seeing more volunteerism getting involved with the public schools to help attack the homelessness issue?
There's a army of amazing people in pockets around the state that do what they can, volunteering at the shelters or the food pantries. The food pantries are gateways to all sorts of resources and finding people who really want to help. Mm-hmm. The community it lies on the shoulders of the community to reach out and help our neighbors.
With that, Jerry Shea, anything else you'd like to add before we take our second break here?
The other thing we'd like to do is establish a scholarship program here for a student who has been homeless at some time in their their career. And Danny and I met with Chancellor Schmidt, for example.
A college scholarship.
The college,
cool.
Yes. We also met with President Barker at the Tech College to try to find some ways to get some of these students involved with the Tech College and also possibly provide education for some of these homeless parents to enable them to get a job or improve their job situation.
Very cool. All right. Well, Jerry Shea, Border Battle Golf Tournament event September 18th, and you can look for the Westside Facebook page to get a link to that. Otherwise, you can listen to our archives, and you can, with a pencil and paper, and jot down that tinyurl.com web address. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side. We're talking about homelessness in schools in western Wisconsin. We'll be right back with more from Danny Klaskis and Kristen Gundry. And we can also take more of your calls and questions and comments. 1-800-228-5615.
Wisconsin Public Radio listeners are smart, thoughtful, and engaged in their communities, and they vote. Go to wisconsinvote.org. It's a unique resource with everything you need to be an informed voter. Dig right into candidate statements, interviews, and articles, not to mention the basics like how to register and where to vote. A service of Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio, wisconsinvote.org is your source for election information you can trust.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Kimberly-Clark Corporation, home of Kleenex, Scott, and Huggies brands. More information about Kimberly-Clark's 144-year history is available on the web at kimberly-clark.com.
The new musical production of Michael Perry's Population 485 at the Big Top Chautauqua will be the highlight of our new Big Top trip via Lamer's Motor Coach to Shawamigan Bay, August 28th and 29th. Read all about it at wpr.org/travel.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about homelessness. Homelessness in public schools, students facing uncertainty with regard to their housing needs. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. I'm joined in studio by Kristen Gundry. She is a Learning Services Associate Director for Cooperative Educational Service Agency number 10, otherwise known as CESA 10. Danny Klaskis is Eau Claire Area School District. She is the Homeless Prevention Coordinator there. 1-800-228-5615. We just also heard about the Border Battle Golf event, which is a fundraiser for that goes with all the proceeds going to homeless students in the Eau Claire Area School District. 1-800-228-5615. We had a caller just before we took our break and talked about the golf event, talking about processing and how do you identify these families that are facing homelessness. I'm wondering, what is that first contact like? I mean, if you get a tip from someone saying, I think these people are, or I know these people, this student is in between houses or housing, you know, they're doubling up or whatever, that's got to be pretty, you got to be pretty discreet and pretty sensitive to people when you first approach them. How does that work? Danny Klaskis.
Well, I always hope that when I learn about it, that family already has some idea that I'll be contacting them.
Yeah.
If it's a family I haven't spoken to before, only because it comes better from, you know, somebody they trust or know already. But still, you know, calling them up and just, you know, with a very compassionate, caring approach, you know, of you know, I'm interested in what's going on. This is a confidential program. I'm only here to help. And probably the most successful thing is just to let them know that there is no judgment, and that really if their child is in need of something, then that's what we're here for. Because if it is a true need, then we need to help figure it out for them, because that child is going to have that fulfilled before they can move on and learn and do well in life. So that seems to come off very well for families. I get a lot of very relaxed and comfortable responses after I start off with.
So with the Eau Claire Area School District specifically, and then we'll talk more about the regional that CESA 10 serves, what kind of – how do districts deal with the homelessness? What kind of services are there? You mentioned, Danny, a little bit before about the transportation, you know, some funds for transportation. But what is your role in helping these families? I mean, is it just – making sure a student is comfortable, or does it go beyond that?
Sure. No. So my focus is making sure that students' educational needs are met, you know, and mainly for me, because our schools, you know, they do an excellent job. So once those kids get to school and they have the things they need for school, you know, they walk into that classroom and then it's that teacher's, you know, time to be with them and to work with them. And schools assess those kids individually to make sure they have what they need. So my job is to get them to school and to make sure that their backpacks have what they need. And the clothes that they go to school in are adequate. You know, when you go to school in the winter and you don't have snow pants, you're not going to be out at recess having a good time as an elementary or preschool student. And when you go to PE and you do not have tennis shoes, again, you're not able to engage in learning and participate. So,
but it's not like the district can just go buy that stuff for someone.
No. So when we were receiving funding through DPI, it was decreased and continued to decrease every year. And so the program became very creative about how to find these resources because they were still needs, no matter if we could pay for them or not. And we began to reach out to the community and got an excellent response of course we'll help. And people actually, I can't take a lot of credit for going out to the community more because we have so many organizations and individuals that approach us and say, we want to help without me even needing to ask. And so we get all of our backpacks, supplies, winter wear, the hygiene products, tennis shoes, even blankets, and some other great stuff we get from community resources.
I see. Now, with regard to CESA, I mean, CESA's job is to offer training and other resources to school districts that don't have a lot of resources themselves. So what kind of things can CESA 10 or you, Kristen Gundry, offer these smaller districts that may have a handful or even just one family that's in this situation? Are you able to muster the same kind of resources from the community?
Yeah, we have amazing school districts. So for them to pull from their communities, from their churches, from their local organizations, all schools have a small stash of school supplies, clothes, winter outerwear. Our biggest barrier in our rural communities is gas cards, mm-hmm. or we are doing a gas card drive at CESA 10 to help families. The rural communities don't have taxis. They don't have buses.
Right.
There's hard to get from place to place, and it's key that kids are able to stay in their school. So if you're moved out of your home and doubled up, you need to find a way to get that child to school, and a gas card can help buy the gas, get you there.
Why is that so key that a student be able to stay at that school versus move to another district or, you know, what's wrong with shifting them around?
The relationships that kids have with their peers, their counselors, their community can be their rock during such a time of transition. Mm. Having that transition with new people and a new teacher and a new building is scary. So
right.
to try to keep them safe so that we can continue to meet their primary needs while life is spinning a little bit.
Absolutely. Let's take our final call of the morning. We go to Ellen in Eau Claire. Ellen, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. Are you there?
I am here. Hi. I work with both of these women.
Okay.
I'm a social worker, and I serve the school district, and I'm also on the board of trustees of Beacon House,
okay.
which is our local shelter for homeless children and their guardians.
Right.
And I just wanted to put in a little plug for our Hike for the Homeless, which is September 24th in the morning at Phoenix Park. So if people wanted to get involved in this issue, that would be a great way to kind of get introduced to some of the problems that homeless children face in our community.
Sure, sure. And is there registration or how do people get involved? Just go to Phoenix Park on that date?
Well, yeah, there is pre-registration. There will be posters and things around, and you'll be seeing advertisements on probably the community TV. We've had TV sponsors before, but I don't think we might not have that this year.
Okay.
You can also just contact the Beacon House downtown or go to the website. Actually, I'm pretty sure there's a Facebook page. I'm not, like, super into social media, but I know that there is online presence of the Beacon House in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and I know they quite sure this year we're taking online donations.
Okay.
Yeah. So
awesome.
It's a really important cause, and I work with a lot of kids that have really been traumatized. What Kristen was saying and Danny both about the importance of maintaining some consistency in their lives by keeping them in their school of origin, I can attest to that being really important, because if you can imagine not having any place to live,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, sometimes sleeping on the floor in a relatively crowded apartment, that is not a very safe and comfortable feeling for kids who have to then go and try to learn.
Sure. The school provides at least one constant that
right on.
That
yep.
gives some comfort. Gotcha. Yep. All right, Ellen, thanks so much for the call.
Sure.
Hike for the Homeless.
Thanks
September.
For the program.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Thanks. Both women in the studio were whispering to each other if that was the Ellen that they thought. Okay.
She's wonderful. She does a lot for our school district, our social workers. So
we've got just over a minute left, and I'm going to ask the biggest, you know, a question that would take another hour probably, but funding, homelessness prevention funding in general and specifically for schools, has it changed? Danny Klaskis, you mentioned that it had been going down until you lost the competitive grant.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Or has there been any just explanation? More people asking for money or what?
Yes, yeah. There's been more identification of homeless students throughout the state. And so they are getting that pressure at DPI for help. And that it was a good solution. It really was. And it is because our population is growing in the state.
Sure. And it's an issue that Kristen Gundry that won't be going away anytime soon, unfortunately.
I'm sorry. No.
Yeah. All right, that is our time. Thank you so much to our guests for their discussion this hour. Danny Klaskis is the Eau Claire Area School District Homeless Program Coordinator. Kristen Gundry is the Learning Services Associate Director for CESA 10. And Jerry Shea is with Border Battle Gulf, fundraising event, which will forward proceeds to the Eau Claire District's fight against homelessness. Also, thanks to Team Westside, including Ellery Lowry, Jim Oliver, Emily Colosimo, and Dean Kallenbeck, and, of course, Debbie Brown. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next Monday morning.